Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Good morning. Welcome to Speak Up. It is Tuesday, December 12th, and we have a special presentation for you today, a collaboration with SFU Galleries. We're going to be making a presentation called Witnessing, Thema Igaris Hughadadeskwech. And it's a two-part presentation. We're going to air the other part two next Tuesday, same time slot as today, Tuesday, December 19th. And it's a really interesting presentation. So what does it mean to bear witness? The act of witnessing is also the act of universal acceptance. Giving is intertwined with wealth and abundance, depending on the reciprocal relationship one has with the land and community. It is the ideology that helped indigenous nations maintain sustenance for centuries. Following Thema Igaris' performance at SFU Gallery in the fall of 2022, Hughadadeskwech, Give It All Away, guest participants were invited to recount the event in, as Igaris describes, a collective remembering, a truth about an experience. Listen as participants Tanya Lucan-Linklater, Alicia Johnny Hawkins, Miguel D'Angeli share their witnessed encounters together in a conversation. The original conversation was 75 minutes, and for broadcast purposes, the audio has been edited down to two equal parts, both opening with the introduction by the editors Haley McLean and Christy Trinier. Original audio editing is by Jean Brazeau, and the radio edit is by Robin Erickson. So here's our presentation of Witnessing, Thema Igaris's Hughadadeskwech. And remember, part two, this is part one. Part two will air next week in this time slot. I'll be back in about 45 minutes. So please enjoy.
If you're not familiar with who I am also from the Tahltan tribe, just like Thema, as well as Alicia, who is with us today. I know Thema because I've been working alongside her for T-Wild for the past 2.5 years now as a research assistant. So I've been helping develop learning curriculums for the school district up north, as well as Tahltan revitalization in terms of artwork and language and being on the land and decolonizing the classroom experience. I was offered this position, this opportunity to help with the witness interview by Christy and Thema about a month ago, and I'm really honored to be here, and I'm really grateful for the opportunity to be a part of this project, especially because I wasn't able to be at the exhibition and the ceremony, which I deeply regret. I had an exam at the same time, unfortunately, but I'm happy to be a part of this with this interview today, so thank you for having me. And before we get started, I wanted to acknowledge the unceded territories that I am currently on. So I'm located in Terrace, British Columbia right now, which is the unceded territories of the Tsimshian Nation, as well as Gitxsan Nation. And I also wanted to offer anyone else to share where they are currently located and which unceded territories they are currently living on or in the Zoom call on.
Thank you, Haley. I can go next. My name is Christy Trinier, and I'm speaking today from the unceded territories of the Musqueam, Tsleil-Waututh, and Squamish First Nations.
I don't feel that I should go next because this being a Tahltan exhibition and being online with two Tahltan women, I feel like you should go next, Alicia.
Hi, I'm Alicia Johnny Hawkins. I'm currently on the unceded territory of the Kaska Dene Nation. I'm in Good Hope Lake, and I'm so thankful to be here and be asked to be a part of this interview. I was fortunate enough to attend Thema's exhibition, which was quite the experience, and I loved every bit of it. And I'm currently working with Thema, with T Wild and Haley for the past 3 months. So it's very, very great work that we're doing. So thank you.
Why was some Florum Newsom Duayu, Dr. Michael D'Angeli Duam Gumsuayu, Assistant Professor at the School of Creative Arts, University of the Fraser Valley, De Hesosnu, Tsimchianu, Lakski Dipteago, Shumat Lakasa, Legi Takwan, De Wotwatku, Takwan Gwa, of some local Luam Godu, Na Lu Yeltgen Gui. So my name is Simplorum Newsom, my real name, and then my other name is Dr. Michael D'Angeli. I am of the Tsimshian Nation of Matlakatla, Alaska, and this is where I'm calling from, the Annette Island Indian Reserve, where I was born and raised. And I also said I'm just really happy to be home, to be calling from my people's territory. Achset Newsom, thank you.
Hi, my name is Tanya Lukine Linklater, and I'm speaking today from the side of Sacred Buffalo Guardian Mountain, known as, I think, Minerpa in Stony Nakoda. This is the Banff area in Treaty 7 territory. So I'm acknowledging the Stony Nakoda, Sutina First Nation, and the Blackfoot Confederacy. I'm just visiting this place right now. It's not my home, but I just wanted to mention that. I'm from the native villages of Afognak and Port Lions, which is in southwestern Alaska, in the Kodiak Archipelago. I'm Shukpiak, but I live and work in Nibising Anishinaabe Gaki, or Nipissing First Nation territory in what is considered Northern Ontario, so north of Toronto. I'm really pleased to be in conversation with folks today.
Thank you all, and to Haley for the acknowledgement. I would like to give you all a welcome from SFU Galleries and just extend our gratitude for you being here today, speaking together. I'd like to share that Tanya Lukin-Linklater, who is a mentor to the Magueras throughout their exhibition, who had Eskelch, give it all away, isn't able to be a part of the conversation today, but will be sharing in the conversation in a separate recording. So as a part of like our gratitude and welcome, we just wanted to share some words from Thema regarding like an inspiration for our conversation today in remembering and witnessing the performance that was held last December at SFU Galleries on Burnaby Mountain. So Thema shared this text: when clothes smell like smoke and vinegar, when fingers rake debris from berries, when skin is stained blue, I know I am rich. Water keeper, this mountain exhales sustenance and shrouds my body to rise again, swirling unimaginable abundance, divine. So pretty beautiful description and inspiration for us to begin. I'll continue on by sharing Tanya Lukin-Linklater's biography. Tanya's performances, works for camera, installations and writings cite indigenous dance and visual art lineages, our structures of sustenance and weather as an organizing force, She undertakes embodied inquiry and rehearsal in relation to scores and ancestral belongings in museums and elsewhere alongside dance artists, composers, and poets. Through collaboration, her works reckon with histories that affect Indigenous peoples' lived experiences, homelands, and ideas. She continues to write in relation to what she has called felt structures. Her Alutiiq and Supiaq homelands are in southwestern Alaska, where much of her family continues to live. She's a member of the native villages of Afnogak and Port Lions in the Kodiak Archipelago.
Next, I'm just going to read out Alicia's biography that she shared with me. So, Alicia Johnny Hawkins is a Tahltan multidisciplinary visual artist. Her practice grapples with mediums like filmmaking, photography, painting, and Indigenous art making through beading, sewing, drumming, and traditional song and dance. She also enjoys being connected to her homelands through activities like fishing, hunting, hiking, and snowshoeing. Hawkins' primary inspirations stem from her desire to share her culture with the world through diverse mediums of creation and traditional sustenance. She is currently pursuing her Bachelor of Visual Arts at Emily Carr University, and she has also recently gained a position as a research assistant alongside me for Tuudecechu Holistic Indigenous Leadership Development, otherwise known as TWILD, in which she will be able to better research, practice, and teach about her Tahltan heritage.
Thank you. Thank you, Haley. I'll read Mikhail D'Angeli's biography. Mikhail D'Angeli was born and raised in Annette Island Indian Reserve and is of the Timshishan Nation of Metalka, Alaska. She is an assistant professor of the School of Creative Arts in the University of the Fraser Valley in Abbotsford, British Columbia. Her work focuses on Indigenous language revitalization, visual and performing arts, resurgence, sovereignty, protocol, and decolonization. D'Angeli is a dancer, choreographer, curator, and activist. As one of the youngest advanced speakers and teachers of her people's language, she is dedicated to teaching Smalkak's language in community-based and university-accredited classes, as well as mentoring learners and educational staff in their process of language acquisition and the creation of pre-K to high school programs. For the past 15 years, she and her husband, artist and carver, Mike D'Angeli of Nixon Nation, have led the Gitxitsek Dancers, an internationally renowned Northwest Coast First Nations dance group specializing in ancient and newly created songs and mask dances. So continuing on, we'll tell a little bit about the background of the exhibition that Thema Garish shared with us last September through December in 2022. Hu Hadaskelch, Give It All Away, gestures towards concepts of value within Thema Garish's ongoing practice concerned with land, embodiment, sustainability, and industrial extraction. Her preparation for this project ranged from harvesting and processing berries, teas, and salmon in her home Tahltan territory to the development of sculpture with materials connected to mine sites. In the exhibition, Garris undertook a series of approaches in art making and display that invited the participation of the viewer, which culminated in a closing performance by the artist last December 10th.
Thank you so much for sharing, Christy. So it was kind of a preempt for this interview and for this witness meeting today. I wrote a little program description just about the idea of what witnessing and what doing business looks like in Indigenous ceremony, specifically Tahltan ceremony, and the experiences that Thema has with it. Goes like this. Witnessing Huga Deskrot, Give It All Away by Thema Garris. What does it mean to witness? To be a part of something much larger and more intertwined than the limitations of the individual. How do we shift the paradigm of business and transaction being rooted in impersonal exchanges of the material to intimate sharings between the self and the collective? In Indigenous philosophy, giving is directly correlated with wealth and abundance, and status is gained or lost depending on the reciprocal relationship one has with the land and their community. As a result, exchanges in business and ceremony and in life take a spiritual form. The act of witnessing is also the act of universal acceptance. It is this ideology that has helped tribes maintain sustenance for centuries. Concepts such as these are analyzed and implemented in Tahltan artist Thema Agaris' most recent exhibition, Witnessing Huga Desklash, Give It All Away. I am also working on my pronunciations, so I apologize in advance. Agaris describes the audio publication as a collective remembering, a truth about an experience to document the gathering and performance that concluded Thema Agaris' solo exhibition at SFU Galleries.
Thank you, Haley. And our conversation today will be edited by sound artist and engineer Jean Brizzo. So we will include Tanya Lucan Linklater in asking what question Tanya wanted to respond to and what resonated most with them. But maybe we'll move ahead, and Haley, I'll let you take it away and connect with Alicia on our first question.
All right, I just wanted to open the floor to you, Alicia, today and ask you which question you were drawn to the most out of the six that we provided to you, and if you wanted to read that out for us as well as give an answer or explain how that question resonated with you and what your opinion on it is. That would be lovely.
Yes, I really was drawn to what conclusions do you draw from the idea of ceremony as a shared experience? And then how does this form of witnessing differ from the business done in a colonized setting? It was really interesting to me. Ceremony to me is very sacred and special, very healing, and being able to connect not only to the land, but also with other people who are involved. And I really loved Thema's exhibition and the way she went about doing everything with the sharing and being able to just witness her steps and process of going through giving everything away in the exhibition. I did have a moment of, a slight shock because of her process and her dismantling of the tapestry of the map. And I was like, it's so beautiful and it's so gorgeous. And then for her to give everyone a piece of that tapestry, which was such an honor. And it really made the experience with everyone in the room and then also with Thema that we all get a piece of that beautiful tapestry that's also an image of like Mounted Zaiza, the Teltan territory. So yeah, that was very, very beautiful. And I think to reference that as in a colonized way is that it would have been there, it would have hung up, not touched, always looked at. But for the title to be like, give it all away, that's really what we do is we share and we give everything that we have and all the hard work that we put into the things that we make is gifting it away and sharing that abundance, which is very beautiful.
Mikhail, did you want to add anything to that question that really resonated with Alicia? Question number three about that experience of the idea of ceremony as a shared experience for others and the form of witnessing and how it might differ from other types of business done in a colonized setting from your experience being present in the performance and exhibition?
I can't not see ceremony as something that isn't a shared experience. So when I saw that question, it made me consider that it is being written by someone from a potlatch background, because it's those that are our relatives in other places that are about having ceremony in private and it not being a shared experience, because, you know, the basic principles of potlatch is about having the witnesses there to remember what has happened. The claims that were made, and in many cases, and not in this case, but the names that were given, the histories that were told, songs and dances and ceremony, the ownership, especially because our potlatch is also our court of law. So that's where our ancient system of copyright happens and our laws are enacted. So when I saw the question, I just, to me, the shared experience and ceremony is like a way of it's like one can't exist without the other. But I think what makes it different in terms of Thema's work and the exhibition is that this was happening in the gallery. So that second question about a colonized space is that this has been a long colonized space. But through the act of having ceremony in the gallery was the process of decolonizing that space, the process of bringing potlatch and our protocol forward. So, and then also home, so into our personal lives. By saying that, what I mean for me personally is that I had my husband, Mike D'Angeli, our oldest son, Michael D'Angeli, and our youngest son, Hayek D'Angeli, with me. And I received the medicine that was gathered by Thema that dried in the gallery. And the medicine wasn't, it was left whole, so it wasn't taken off of the branches. So I got to go home and to take that medicine and prepare it for its preservation in a glass jar with a cloth top so it would breathe, just like my aunties taught me. And I got to continue to take that medicine and be reminded of that time that we spent together in ceremony and the work that Thema and those that were supporting her did. And then to build upon what Alicia has said about the tapestry. So some of my favorite, I'm an art historian, and some of my favorite pieces in museum collections are the ones that conservators cry about, people that don't understand the power of dismantling something and giving it away. So there's these amazing, in a few different collections I've been in, there's these amazing woven Chilkat leggings, and it's from a Chilkat blanket that was cut into pieces at a potlatch, and the pieces were given away and leggings were made out of them. And so when my husband and my two sons received pieces of those tapestries, and I did too, Mike and I, our first thought was, we're going to make these into regalia for Hayek. So we're taking those pieces and we're going to sew leggings, because they're, you know, he's so tiny, he's only three, so they're perfect toddler leggings, and to add it to his dance apron. So to take that home and to continue to remember and to create new forms of embodied memory for our little guy and, you know, generations after him, as that regalia is a part of our family now, that collective experience of ceremony continues on collectively in different ways.
That was such a powerful kind of recollection that you shared, of so many amazing points. But having been there and seen your family join you at the opening, but also at the performance, maybe you could describe a little bit about how Hayek and Mike D'Angeli Sr. were also singing and giving a gift to the rest of everyone who was present in that circle. I mean, not everyone listening to us in the future will have an imagination of what the exhibition was, but we were in a circle around a tapestry that was created by Thema, which had two sides to it, depicting Mounted Zidza, but it also had copper pennies sewn along the edges, and so there were these other elements. Maybe you could share a bit about that.
We're training our little guy, Hayek. Natty is what we refer to him every day because he's the youngest boy, and Natty is how we say baby boy in Somaliyah. And he's the first generation, the first language speaker. So two generations of our family, my husband's and mine, went through residential school, and we had lost our languages within our family in the way that there was knowledge that was maintained, but it wasn't enough to be, and also all of the trauma of the decisions that were made to not pass it down. So Hayek is a first language speaker, first language Somalic speaker. And I asked him in our language when it was our turn as a family to share, Goyu Hasagan. And the minute I asked him, he had said to me in our language as well, Hasago Halait. And that's how he he renames everything in our language, which is really sweet. And so he was talking, halait is our chief's headdress, so that the halait is the frontlet. And so we didn't have his frontlet with us because we had down, and we just wanted to make sure that, you know, we always bring down with us because it's our medicine. So I'm referring to eagle down as a form of protection, and then as a form of, if we're called upon to do anything in ceremony, we want to make sure and to give our blessing in the way of our thagiget, our ancestors. And so we sang, Mike specifically sang our chief's headdress song, and our three-year-old spread the down as a part of it. And to have him step up ceremonially, he danced without us, it was just him, to make the decision of what song he thought was most appropriate, and then to dance that song and to spread the down. It was a really beautiful moment for us to share with Thema, especially being that her little girl was there and they're about the same age. And in some Aleich, Nadi kept referring to her as Dathli, which is baby girl. So cute, because he's a baby too. But I think that to me, in terms of another process of decolonizing the space, is that children are not welcome in most gallery spaces. You know, there's so much concern about what damage they can do, especially toddlers. And that was a welcoming space for our people of all ages, and to really strengthen the potlatch that was happening, that those little ones are as important as our elders in terms of generationally. They're going to bring that knowledge forward long before, you know, long after we're gone. And in terms of what you're referring to, Christy, with the pennies on the one side, and I didn't get to talk to Thema about this, but my reading of her inclusion of the pennies, because I think of this when I think of our Tauten and Tlingit relatives, because that was a trade item that we received from our relatives along the Copper River, especially, that those noisemakers is one of the reasons we got so excited, Mike and I, another reason to make it into regalia, so that those pennies would do the work of creating the noises that now deer hooves and sometimes jingles. You see our people are using jingles too from our neighbors back east to make those sounds to emphasize the movement.
Thank you. Alicia, is there anything you'd like to add to that kind of response as well from Mikhail?
I really appreciate having the little ones in the gallery, and doing the dance as well was like so heartwarming and very beautiful. And I think it was explained that the down is almost like a blessing that's spread around. It was so great. I just really loved seeing him perform and the culture. And that's what I love about when ceremony is done, that there's certain steps and certain things that is done to honor who we are or where we came from, and to really bring culture to everything. It's very beautiful. I really enjoyed the whole performance and the exhibition altogether. And I know there was a piece where Thema explained that the medicine that was hanging on the wall, it was something that was slightly conflicting, either to share that information or to not. And I'm finding when it comes to our culture, either some things are not shared and then some things are in books. You know, some things are oral knowledge and passed down and shared. So it's like, where is that really like fine line of what are we willing to share with others, to the public, where it's like Indigenous people, it's, if you know, you know, the knowledge, because it's always shared around amongst everybody. So that really, as an artist for myself and being in an exhibition space or a gallery space, that I consciously try to think about now is what I'm willing to share or not share with the collective. And yeah, thank you.
I actually teased Thema during my time to respond to the work that she actually didn't give it all away. And that's a wonderful thing, because she was protecting the medicine by not saying, even giving the name of the medicine, how it was harvested, where it was harvested, the time of year, you know, all of the details that industry especially needs to capitalize upon Indigenous knowledge through their extraction practices. So there was this beautiful holding, protecting of Indigenous knowledge, as much as the physical was given away in that space and ingested, even with the teas, the big copper bowl that Thema made with that really rich, I think it was primarily rose hip was the base of the tea. And it was the first time ever that my little guy had even tried tea before. So that was really sweet to see him so excited. to share in its medicinal value, but to not give that information away of even what all went into that tea.
Haley, would you like to share a little bit, because you helped with the sewing of the copper pennies and assisted Thema in that process? Is there anything that you wanted to share for that question on ceremony as a shared experience?
I just like to acknowledge how grateful I am to have been able to help with the setup of the exhibition. And I was aware of what Thema was planning on doing with the blanket at the end of the ceremony. And she like made me aware before I started the sewing, and we were really excited about it.
So in the recording of the conversation that happened, and unfortunately I couldn't attend, I was really struck by Mike Yell's description of the power of dismantling something and giving it away, and specifically this sort of history of Chilkat blankets cut and then given in potlatch, and then those later being made into garments or regalia. I really appreciated sort of her description of how this is a way of being, and also her later description of protocol as a form of structure that guides us in our efforts, and specifically that protocol is really about teachings that guide us in our efforts. So I was really grateful for that discussion. And also Alicia's discussion of this question around what do we share with a public, what do we sort of hold, you know, within different spaces. I think about sort of different groups that we're in relation to. So sometimes it's our family, our clan, our larger community of our folks that, you know, our Indigenous nations. And I've often sort of erred on the side of a kind of generative refusal to share embodied ways of being, but not to share the actual teachings themselves in an exhibition. I think she's really asking an important question about this sort of like line about how we ethically navigate these questions. And I think that Thema really addressed that throughout her preparation for this project, through all of these sort of thinking and being on the land and the sewing and the making. She had this rigorous practice. I was able to mentor Thema, although I must clarify that this really was a reciprocal relationship where I learned just as much as I shared. I think that partly my role was to encourage, to listen, to provide feedback from my perspective as someone who has never potlatched. Those old practices of feasting and dancing and singing, while they're being renewed on my island, I've never participated in a potlatch before, and I don't know that that's the word that we would use to describe what we have done historically and are in the process of reinvigorating. But I know that Thumma really took all of these questions very seriously about how she's citing these deeply powerful processes through this, in this rigorous practice. And as Haley said, Thumma is reinvigorating, you know, Tultan philosophies and practices in different strategies, in different ways within the community and in her artistic practice. So just think that this attention that Alicia brought to this question is quite powerful. Partly it has to do with the fact that Potlatch is very public. And so in some regards, as Mike Yell has explained, it is different from some of the other ceremonial practices that other Indigenous people participate in. But I just deeply appreciated all of the comments throughout.
We were really excited about it and the whole process and idea of something that is like being degraded from its original form, but not really, because it's being passed to all the witnesses in the ceremony, and everybody gets to take a piece of this exhibition, this experience, home with them. The spirituality and the power in that, people from all different tribes, people from all different parts of the world were there, and it was just really beautiful to play a part in that. And I was really happy that she wanted me to help with the exhibition. Yeah, I don't know, I wish I was there to experience it firsthand. I did, however, still get a goodie bag, and I do have my piece with me as well. I'm really, really grateful. Yeah, I love that idea of the cyclical relationship of something that is being made for this ceremony, for this business, but just because it is, we have this society, this way of looking at, we don't destroy things that are made to be seen. We have this like sense of ownership over the idea of art and the idea of making and creating art. That's something like cutting up a tapestry is viewed as like painful, and it's almost like a breakthrough in a way. But that really ties into the idea of spirituality and my like my connection to my culture is that everything continues to take new forms. Everything's constantly transforming. Everything is connected, whether or not like we are saying goodbye to the tapestry in its full form, we are still entering new beginnings for everyone who was involved. And I find that really beautiful.
Thank you. Mikael, would you like to choose our next question for you, Alicia, and maybe also Haley to respond to?
I was really drawn to question number one, because really, for me, having grown up in our potlatch system here in Mount Lakatla, Alaska, one completes the other. It would be incomplete, and you really couldn't fully potlatch. You can't fully potlatch without having witnesses, without paying those witnesses. And then the doing of business is why you're there, why you've worked so hard to get there. So it's the doing of business happens long before the potlatch. That's everything that has happened to get to the potlatch and everything that happens at the potlatch. So these concepts are, they're interrelated, and it's not to say that they always have to happen in a particular order, because there's so much witnessing that happens pre-potlatch that it's not talked about as much, but the passing down of knowledge that relates to the reason for the potlatch happens throughout the family especially, and is so, so strong, so that they can stand together, the family or clan. We primarily potlatch as families here, and there's a lot of multi-clan potlatches. Our system is of potlatching is very different here. In terms of, we have four clans, so it's not always about our opposites. And we have many potlatches that are multiple days long, that one clan will take a day. So the relationship, that symbiotic is a perfect word, I think, to talk about it, because of the way that one doesn't exist without the other. And all of those terms, witnessing, giving, doing business, you know, protocol is another one that I would put up there because of my work on specifically on dancing sovereignty, that, you know, each of these parts of the potlatch has their own protocol. And really, it's about structure and about, you know, sometimes people think laws are the word law is too heavy, but it's essentially what guides us in our efforts. And these are teachings. Teachings guide us in our efforts and to stay true to who we are as nations, family, and communities. So I thought it was a really important question to consider. And also to consider it in relation to Thema's work and to consider it into the gallery space. Because, you know, I would say that I've seen artists along the Northwest Coast do a lot of business in gallery spaces. But more of the business of like standing up people, acknowledging from their efforts, talking about their own clan or community identity. But it wasn't a potlatch. There wasn't gifts. There wasn't here are the witnesses for what the business that has happened here, and even the word using the word business and doing business. So I think that's where Thema's practice really, again, to use that word, decolonize, but indigenize that space to say that this is a place of potlatch. Without saying this is a place of potlatch. It was the practice of potlatch through all of those witnessing, giving, and doing business that made Thema, that performance really exist in so many different realms simultaneously.
Thank you. Alicia, would you like to respond to that question number one? Can read it if you want. What sort of connections do you derive from the act of witnessing, giving, and doing business? And is there a symbiotic relationship between these concepts? What do they mean for you?
I think when it comes to, if this is more of like a event or ceremony or gathering type of setting, I've been to a lot of events where it is like witnessing, and I'm not really familiar with like the potlatch like protocols or even like the bigger, more official like ceremonies, but I think it's just a form of reciprocity, and it's the giving and the taking. And I enjoyed the part of Thema's gallery where you would take a cup, drink from the tea, and then also place the cup on this type of shelf podium. It's, you place the cup there when you're done with it, but then you were also able to grab a program kind of in a sense of an exchange, which was very interesting to me. And her program was like her poster that had the information on her exhibition. And yeah, it was quite the interesting concept that really had me thinking. Yeah.
Thank you, Alicia. Is there anything you would like to add, Haley, for that question on the act of witnessing, giving, and doing business and symbiotic relationships between the concepts?
I think I really appreciate the polarity between what it is to do business in an Indigenous setting with an Indigenous philosophies as compared to what we view as business and lawmaking in current colonized capitalistic society. I like, Michael, that you mentioned earlier that law we view as such a heavy word, which already like points to the connotations that we have it as being something clinical and impersonal and serious, when in Indigenous culture, it's a form of connection. There's so much love and welcoming and respect in everything that we do with our business, and that everybody is involved. It is it's a mutually beneficial agreement, and it's something that we just kind of know in our hearts is how it needs to be done. It needs to be done with genuine intentions and with integrity, And that way you know what you're doing is right. And you have the people there to witness it, and everyone agrees. I feel like a lot of times now in politics and in government, a lot is happens behind the scenes. A lot is kept from the general public and from like society in general. And we don't have that connection and that respect that was shown by, from our ancestors in our pre-colonized ways of dealing with things and being and knowing. And so it's a big topic for me. It's something I really, really want to study more and to revitalize and bring into my own interactions in daily life of being respectful of the people I work with, the dynamics I have in my family, in my relationships, and recognizing that we all have a role to play and we need to be aware of that and conscious of that in everything that we do, not just in ceremony, but in life, because things we do in ceremony are a reflection of the people that we want to be and the relationships that we want to have in our daily lives.
A couple of those comments were how Michael acknowledged that the practice or the what occurred in the performance, Thema's performance, was existing in so many realms simultaneously. I think this is a really important and adept observation. I think that Thema's intention was perhaps not to enact ceremony, but to cite those practices. And yet sometimes in that citation or in that action, we are sort of bringing that intention and that energy to the work that we're doing. I felt that she was really living by this sort of, you know, ethic of reciprocity that Alicia spoke to, and also that Haley spoke to, that ceremony is a reflection of what we want to be in daily life. And so if you think about it that way, Thema was really taking these principles or the ethos or the action of potlatch and deploying that or enacting those principles in this performance. And then the impact of that is quite profound, as we heard from everyone who attended the performance or who were a part of the exhibition.
Thank you, Haley, for writing our descriptions and guiding our conversation and creating those really rich and resonant questions that had so many different aspects to think through together. Thank you all.
So before we log off today, part ways, and return to the chaos of our daily lives, I want to take this moment to express gratitude for this meeting. I want to acknowledge the roles that we all play in not only witnessing, but breathing life into an experience and fulfilling the relationship between speaker and listener and host and visitor. I want to say Madhu, which is thank you in the Teltan language. Madhu to our witnesses and talented speakers, Tanya, who is not with us today, Alicia and Michael, thank you for sharing your thoughts and adding endless substance to this gathering. Madhu to Christy and Christopher for the time and energy you've extended towards the exhibition as well as this meeting. Your efforts do not go unnoticed. And finally, I want to say Madhu to Thema for her ongoing work in revitalizing Indigenous philosophies and specifically Teltan ways of knowing and being. I also want to extend gratitude on her behalf to everyone who joined us here today to discuss her work and her art and the legacy that she is creating. Thank you so much.
And thank you for listening. That ends part one of our presentation of witnessing Thema Igaris, there is actually a pronunciation guide, but it's still a wee challenge. Hukadesquelch. So witnessing Thema Igaris Hukadesquelch. That was a part of a presentation of Thema Igaris's performance of Hukadesquelch at the SFU Gallery in the fall of 2022. And then what we've been listening to is a discussion of that performance and the issues it raised. And we will be presenting part two. The speakers you were hearing in that discussion were Tanya Lucan Linklater, Alicia Johnny Hawkins, and Mikel D'Angeli. That we will be back next week at the same time at Tuesday at 10 a.m. on December 19th for part two of this very interesting discussion. And I hope you will be back here with us next week. Now we have coming up in a couple of moments, we have a personal reflection of the experience as a newcomer and an international student of arriving here in Canada alone, right at the beginning of the pandemic. I think we all found the pandemic. Well, it's still with us, and it still affects us. And it was quite in many ways, a sort of shocking sort of thing to go through. Even though at the same time, you know, it seemed to be something experienced in the sense of an absence, because all of a sudden we were all stuck at home. Perusi Wanchea was a international student coming to Canada to study at SFU, and she arrived right at the beginning of the pandemic, and had the misfortune of not only arriving right at the beginning of the pandemic before we really understood everything that was going on, but on a flight with other people who had been infected, and the consequent infection that she received herself. This is her personal reflection on that, and recorded here for CJSF, and I hope you enjoy this.
Hi everyone, my name is Perusi Wanyancha, and I'm a student in the Semester in Dialogue class 392, and today I'll be talking about my experience with the pandemic as an international student who just landed in Canada, and I'm recording live from CJSF FM radio studio. The year is 2021, and COVID is still making headlines. Everyone at the airport had their masks on, which seemed pointless as people took them off in the plane. After a 26-hour trip, the paranoia of contracting the disease got me. What would it be like to get COVID in a new country? An international student in a swamped Canadian healthcare system with no public health insurance, now actually suffering from a pandemic. Flashback to the day I landed in Vancouver, waiting for my older sister to pick me up from the airport. Our joy overflowed despite COVID restrictions, limiting us to a distant hug. I was ready to break the self-quarantine rule to explore this new place. Little did I know it would be a long, insufferable night of solitude in an empty basement apartment. I woke up in the middle of the night with a headache and could not go back to sleep due to jet lag. My head was banging like a hammer hitting on a wall, which only got worse by the second. I could feel my pulse rate on both sides of my head, extending to my eyes. Soon after, all other symptoms crept in all at once. At this point, I'm thinking, this is it. There is no way I'm going to survive this. A fever accompanied with intense chills followed, making my pajamas soaking wet after sweating profusely. It is as if someone poured ice on me while lying in bed. The feeling of hopelessness had me sobbing with a runny nose. All these symptoms were pointing to COVID, honestly. It felt like the end of the world. There was nobody to call at 2 a.m. Mind you, I'm supposed to be self-isolating, and my sister lived at least an hour away from my apartment by public transport. It was 7 a.m. in the morning, and my symptoms were getting worse. My sister called to check on me, and I mustered up the courage to talk to her. I downplayed the severity of my sickness, so to hide the truth from my parents. I felt like a prisoner in an empty basement apartment. Except a prisoner had a better shot at surviving with better medical insurance, honestly. As an international student, I had private medical insurance at the moment that only covered for injuries and would have to pay out of pocket, then get reimbursed after assessment. Provincial medical insurance was not a choice, since it takes 3 months to be in effect. My last resort was the holistic approach that relied only on Mother Nature instead of medical care. My sister sent DoorDash to my doorstep with a recovery package. Lemon juice, ginger, garlic, citrus juice, and food to boost my immune system. I made a concoction with the raw ingredients in hot water and drank it for a whole week. Most of the food bought was already pre-cooked to ease my food preparations. Every sip and every bite felt like a warm embrace from my beloved sister. Oh, what a relief to know you're cared for by loved ones even from a distance. Upon reflection with the Canadian healthcare system, I started comparing the treatment options with that of my home country, Tanzania. The major setback is how slow the system is to respond to the patient. Insurance takes a long time to process and issue as they wait for the 6-month time frame that proves the eligibility for temporary residency. In Tanzania, once you pay for that insurance, everything gets covered, including drugs. So the pressure is not really on whether you can afford the treatment, but rather on the accuracy of that diagnosis. This is where Canadian healthcare outshines Tanzania. The long wait times can be discouraging, but rest assured the treatment will be more precise. Eventually, I told my parents, however, they were powerless to intervene with the system. Throughout this experience, I've developed greater mental resilience, allowing me to reflect with confidence on my ability to overcome challenges, including my upcoming surgery. I dedicate this written piece to every immigrant out there, especially international students who have no one to rely on when life throws lemons. The lesson is to be more self-sufficient so that nothing shakes you. The pandemic has sparked a conversation about healthcare sector shortcomings and the need to enhance responsiveness. As the general public, advocating for those with an unearned disadvantage involves addressing disparities in Medicare access for immigrants, who, despite not paying taxes like Canadian citizens and permanent residents, contribute significantly to the country's economy. The pandemic has sparked a conversation about healthcare sector shortcomings and the need to enhance responsiveness. As the general public, advocating for those with an unearned disadvantage involves addressing disparities in Medicare access for immigrants, who, despite not paying taxes like Canadian citizens and permanent residents, contribute significantly to the country's economy. International students alone contribute over $22.3 billion per year. Imagine how much more can be made with medical coverage adjustment. Food for thought, huh?
Thank you to Perusi Wanchaya. And that was her reflection on her experience of arriving here in Canada as an international student into the thick of the COVID pandemic. Here is, well, we're just about out of time here at the CJSF and at Speak Up. We're going to finish the show off with a bit of Ani DeFranco. And she's just recently released a 25th anniversary version, re-release of her album Little Plastic Castles. This is the lead-off track from that, Little Plastic Castles. Stay tuned for Democracy Now! Coming up in about a minute.
In a coffee shop in a city, which is every coffee shop in every city, on a day which is every day, I picked up a magazine, which is every magazine. I read a story, then I forgot it right away. And And they say goldfish have no memory. I guess their lives are much like mine. And the little plastic castle is a surprise every time. And it's hard to say